All right, well, thank Antoine and the other organizers for this chance to come here and speak. Where's the pointer? You don't have a pointer? Oh, the big one. Okay, so they're going to tell you about some recent work, mainly with many of the ideas due to Senthil at MIT and also Matthias Boyta, who's now at Karlsruhe. So the ideas I'm going to present, in some sense, are really quite simple. And hopefully after you hear them, you have the feeling that, well, this is all completely obvious, what's really new. So I hope you pay close attention and hope to convince you that there's really something novel in what we're saying, and they do have, hopefully, strong implications for many of the experiments we heard about today. So when we wrote this paper up, we thought we were going to have trouble with referees, but we didn't expect to be rejected by CONMAT. And if you look at your email, it is true that on Thursday, September 5, ends at 143, starts at 145, and guess who was 144? Okay, so here's the outline of my presentation. I'll begin with a sort of a review of the Doniak phase diagram, which all of you know, which has been the basis of our study of many of the heavy fermion systems, and a quick discussion of its quantum critical point, and which has formed the basis of fairly a number of the talks we've heard today. Then I'm going to argue that the way to really understand many of the experiments is not to focus so much about the quantum critical points at first, but to really think about, you know, are there any new phases that are possible in this phase diagram? And the new phase I'm going to introduce, we're going to call FL star, and the star is following a notation of people here in Santa Barbara, and thinking about various fractionalized excitations, mainly in antiferromagnets. But we'll find that similar ideas also apply to Kondo lattices. And the novel part, the section that hopefully convince you that there's something deep in what we're talking about will be based upon this argument, which is due to many people, which I'll argue is essential to understanding the whole idea of the FL star phase. And then I'll talk about how, once you have the concept of FL star in front of you, you can quickly extend it and really understand many of the phases very simply. And then a plethora of interesting quantum critical points become possible, and hopefully with many interesting properties, and hopefully related to experiments. So let me talk about Kondo lattice models. So as everyone here knows, a Kondo lattice model consists of some set of localized spins, which I'll call the F spins, coupled to the conduction electron, we'll call them C. And then you want to ask for the ground state of this lattice system as a function of the ratio of JK to T. And Doniak proposed a phase diagram, which is really in many, you know, really very important and correct in many ways. And the basic feature of the phase diagram at zero temperature is that two states. There's one state at large JK, which I'll call a Fermi liquid state. And it's a Fermi liquid state in the sense that it obeys Luttinger's theorem. And I'll present the precise statement of Luttinger's theorem, which is really quite important to think about this carefully. So there is a unique Luttinger's theorem. And that unique Luttinger's theorem is obeyed by this Fermi liquid state at large JK. And then at small JK, the argument is, well, there's coupling between the ions, which goes as JK squared, whereas the Kondo temperature is exponentially small in JK. So perhaps this coupling between the moments is much more important, and the spins essentially become static and form some antiferromagnetic arrangement, and that forms an STW state. And this state, too, has a Fermi surface, if the geometry is right. And again, Luttinger's theorem is obeyed in this state also. So both, even though the size of the Fermi surface may change across this transition and the unit cell doubles, or maybe even more than doubles, it's still true that Luttinger's theorem, properly defined, is obeyed everywhere. Okay, so what is Luttinger's theorem? So let me first consider the case without any broken spin notation symmetry, the Fermi liquid state. So you take your ground state, whatever it is, and call nu naught the volume of the unit cell of the ground state, and then count all the electrons in the system, every electron, the 1s electron, just everything, and let the total number of electrons be nt per volume v naught. Now, in this simple model that I've written down, nt will be the number of f electrons plus nc, and f, of course, if you're just thinking of the spins, is 1, so the total number of electrons is 1 plus the number of conduction electrons. If you counted the 1s electrons, you added a 2 there, and so on. And the statement is that the volume enclosed by the Fermi surface times 2 in appropriate units is given by the total number of electrons mod 2. And the crucial factor here is, of course, mod 2 means that you can always remove a filled band as defined to the relative, the unit cell that you have. You can always remove 2 electrons per unit cell, or 1 electron per spin per unit cell. Doesn't contribute to the Fermi surface volume. Okay, so now this state here, the heavy Fermi liquid state, obeys this theorem, and there's many ways of seeing it. I'm sure I'm not telling it anything new here. One simple way to see it is to argue, well, we know from the single ion condo physics, JK flows to infinity. So let's imagine a similar thing holds in the lattice. Well, if JK flows to infinity, each F electron will bind a conduction electron in a singlet. You get a whole bunch of singlets. And then the remaining F electrons will have just, you know, be free to rotate in a sense. But they can also hop. This singlet can hop from here to there. So you get a theory of just these spin a half holes moving through the entire lattice. And presumably those spin a half holes form a Fermi liquid. So the volume of the Fermi surface, well, since you've got holes, you've got to put a minus sign times the density of holes mod 2. The density of holes is 1 minus nc, and that's 1 plus nc mod 2, and that's the Lattice theorem. So that's a very simple way to see it. Another way, which has also been known for a long time, is to start from the Anderson lattice, where you don't have any spins, but you have both f and c electrons, and with a strong repulsion u on the side of the f electrons. So for small u, this is, of course, just free electrons. We know that in this theorem. And then we also know from many studies of the Anderson lattice and the Kondo problem that the physics of small u and large u are continuously connected. So since the Fermi surface volume can't change under adiabatic evolution, we get the same answer. So this is a standard result applying to this FL phase. All right, so let me go back a minute. So that's just belaboring things everyone here knows, that at large JK you have this heavy Fermi liquid state, which by Lattice theorem should obey, should have a volume given by the F electrons plus the C electrons. And this is the spin density wave state at small JK. So now you have a critical point, and as Frank and Hilbert have discussed, there is a well-established theory for this critical point. And the basic idea is that at low energies, there's a Fermi surface in the system. The important low energy excitation is simply fermionic quasi-particles near this Fermi surface. So whatever these quasi-particles are, they are some linear combination of F and C, call them H. And then these quasi-particles carry spin. So you write down a paramagnon operator, if you wish, which is just the spin of this quasi-particle. And you write down an effective theory for the fluctuation of phi, which is the paramagnon. So this was done by Hertz, and what he showed was that you get some action for the paramagnon fluctuations dependent on Q, where Q is measured from some ordering wave vector. And the key thing is this mod omega term. This is the damping coming from the particle hole continuum associated with the Fermi surface. And then there's some coupling which vanishes at the critical point. Now what Hertz showed was that all the nonlinear couplings are formally irrelevant in dimensions 2 and higher. So formally, the critical theory is just a free Gaussian field theory. Now, prior to Hertz and also since Hertz, we now understand much better, especially due to contribution of Andy Millis. People had also actually looked at this theory effectively without using the language of critical phenomena and found that if you sat at the critical point, which is delta equals 0, the delta is some tuning parameter at 0 temperature, then there's some term here, some lifetime, if you wish, of the paramagnon, which will depend on temperature. And this is then a correction to scaling. It's determined by all the nonlinear couplings here, which are non-universal and don't really go to any universal value at the critical point. And what was shown was that this gamma, depending on conditions, and I think both Hilbert and Frank have shown number of explicit examples, this gamma vanishes at some power of t, but it's very important the power is greater than 1. Right at the upper little dimension, it will be just logarithmically smaller than t. But it's always smaller than kt, usually with the power here. Okay, so that's the spin density wave theory. Okay, so one point of view is that this theory is basically correct, and I think I tend to agree with that. Many people have looked at various corrections to this theory, and in particular Chubukov and Ivanov and also Akim Roche have pointed out some interesting effects in two dimensions where this leads to rather singular lifetime for the quasi-particles. But apart from that, the basic structure of the theory seems to be correct. So the claim is that if you have these two phases, the Fermi-liquid phase as defined with this volume given by Lettinger's theorem, and the spin density wave state with also Weyl's Lettinger's theorem in its own unit cell, then this is the correct theory. And I agree with that. There are contrary opinions on this, and so but I think the claim of my talk will be that to get something different, you need new phases. You need some entirely new order parameters beyond this spin density wave order parameter. They'll probably agree with that too, but in a very different language. In particular, we know from other studies of quantum critical points, which are not described by free field theories, where really you can't stop at the Gaussian level. You have other terms here which are strong and flow to some universal value at the critical point. But what you get there is that this gamma, if the order parameter is phi, this gamma would be, in fact, just proportional to kT with a universal coefficient, and the whole thing would be universal function of h bar omega over kT. And that's certainly not true in this spin density wave theory. Okay, and this is, of some interest because some of the experiments certainly seem to show some aspect of omega over t scaling, but okay, it's not clear what that is due to. Is it, could that be understood by some extension of the spin density wave theory, or is it an indication of some really new physics? Okay. All right, so that's a review of previous work and where I think theoretically things stand from my biased perspective. Now I want to take a little detour and, keeping with the philosophy of my presentation, really argue that the way to think about this is to really search for new phases in this Doniak phase diagram. And the phase we're going to talk about is FL star. Okay, so this is a new ground state, I think, of a Kondo lattice Hamiltonian. It preserves spin rotation invariance and has a Fermi surface of sharp electron-like quasi-particles, meaning the quasi-particles have charge E and spin a half. But what's new about it is that even though it has a Fermi surface, it doesn't obey Lettinger's theorem properly defined. And it turns out that the volume enclosed by the Fermi surface in appropriate units, normally it was nt mod 2, is now nt minus 1 mod 2. So it is possible under certain circumstances, in dimensions greater than 1, I claim, where to remove half an electron per spin per unit cell from the Fermi surface volume, not one per spin per unit cell. And you do this at a price. And the price you pay is that this state you get is an exotic state. There's many other low energy excitations, and it has which carry spin, which are neutral, and also in a well defined has some sort of topological order. So I'll give you one simple example of such a state, which I think it's pretty reliably established, and we think many other hopefully examples can be found. So the idea of the star phases and this kind of fractionalization coexisting with many other orders goes back to work of these people here in a different context. And also we were very influenced by a paper by Burden et al. Where they talked about something very close to this, although did not emphasize or notice the topological order that we claim must be there. Okay. So let's go back to the model, the Kondo lattice model. And now, just for theoretical purposes, not because there's anything fundamental to this, I add another term here, which is an explicit Heisenberg coupling. So this is sometimes called the Kondo-Heisenberg model. But it's possible, in principle, it's possible everything we are saying also applies for JH equals zero. And JK can be a very complicated thing, depending on the Fermi surface, can lead to very complicated RKKY interactions. So here we're imagining with some dense Kondo lattice, and it's useful for the dense Kondo lattice to explicitly have an exchange coupling between the F moments. So the way we're going to approach this is to first imagine this is large, and then couple the conduction electrons only weakly, perturbatively in JK. And that turns out to be rather simple to work out, since we now know a lot about these systems with JH. So, all right, so let's just first think about this kind of term, just the F moments. Ignore the conduction electrons for a while. Okay, so one obvious set of states you can get are states of magnetic order. But we don't want to work with these. We want to get states without magnetic order to reach this FL star phase. But let's start with these just to get some idea of what are the possibilities. So this would be what Doniak would have said. At small JK, the spins order, and on the square lattice, they can order in something. There's two sublattice arrangement. On the triangle lattice, you can get some more complicated arrangement. And the key thing is that this the difference between these two arrangements, this requires just one vector, n, to describe it. And this requires two vectors to specify the manifold of ground states, n1 and n2, which are mutually orthogonal. OK, so let's look at this kind of state. Now, and imagine now the n starts fluctuating, so that you get, in the end, preserve spin rotation invariance. Now, one kind of state you can get, and we claim this is what happens for these states, you can get some kind of dimerized states. The spins form singlets, and the singlets then arrange themselves in some regular manner. And one very crude way of seeing that this is correct is to look at the excitation of the state. So the excitation of the state is just a spin one object, the triplet excitation here, which can move through the lattice. And you, crudely speaking, you can think of this triplet. So there's three quasi-particles here. They just correspond to the three components of n. You had a vector, n, which is ordered. Then when it disorders, you've got a massive field with three components, and that's this triplet here. So there's a simple connection, at least at the level of the order parameters, between these states. So this is one possible state when you disorder the spins. Now you turn on the conduction electrons. This is what's happened say, to the F spins. This will, of course, naturally double the unit cell, and it's possible condo lattices do this. But if we did this and now put in the conduction electrons by adding a JK, you can do perturbation theory in JK, and you'll find it's completely stable and OK. So what this means is that the picture of the F spins forming singlets with each other in this way. So they have formed singlets and gone out of the problem. And the conduction electrons are free to move approximately decoupled. That decoupled picture is basically correct. And you know, so you've got what you would call a small Fermi surface, determined only by NC. But the point is that this state, actually correctly defined, obeys the regular Plattinger theorem. And that's because you've doubled the unit cell, so the number of F electrons per unit cell is 2. So the total number of electrons mod 2 is just given by the number of conduction electrons. So this is just, this is a very conventional state. It's a Fermi liquid state, which happens to have some kind of other bond order parameter, spin piles coexisting with the liquid order. All right, so now let me go to the other possibility. This is sort of one way of getting all this. There are many other ways to see it. So let's say we start with a triangle lattice where the spins form this kind of antiferromagnet with this coplanar arrangement with 120 degrees next to each other, which requires two vectors to specify it. Now disorder this, and what we claim happens when you disorder this is something that Anderson talked about many years ago. You get the spin liquid states, where the spins form singlets with each other, and these singlets are, you know, in really in a liquid-like arrangement through the entire lattice. And furthermore, the excitations now consist of these spin a half objects or spin ons that can move through the entire lattice. So, you know, okay, I want to. So, why can this happen here and couldn't happen for the square lattice, at least in that simple argument? Well, here's one way to see it. It's a very crude argument, but I think it's basically correct. So the ordered state, I said, required two vectors to specify it, n1 and n2. And we want to allow these to fluctuate and lose your long-range magnetic order. Now, these n1 and n2 satisfy a complicated set of constraints, which are not easy to play with. So you can solve this constraint partially by introducing two complex numbers, z1 and z2, which obey this. So these are basically defined then, the points on the surface of a sphere in four dimensions. And if you make this ansatz, I invite you to check that all of these constraints are automatically obeyed. So notice there's no star here. This is just z times z. And you get two orthogonal vectors out of them by this simple ansatz. And so if I give you a point on the surface of a sphere, I give you a ground state. So every point on the surface of a sphere in four dimensions defines a different ground state of the triangle lattice. Except for one subtlety, and that's of course the key thing, two points define the same ground state. I can change z to minus z. That's really the only change I can make. Any other change of z will give me a distinct ground state. So if I want to specify the set of degenerate ground state in the triangular lattice with magnetic order, that's given by the space of S3/Z2. And for each point on the sphere, modulo this identification of north and south poles, you get a distinct ground state. So that very naturally then leads to a Z2 gauge structure. And it's one of the simplest ways of seeing where Z2 gauge theory comes from. So now, so once you have the structure, this actually leads also very nicely to the concept of defects in the structure. So let's again think about a state with magnetic order. And imagine, when it turns out you can create a vortex in that state in two dimensions. And the vortex is the following. So at each point, I have some orientation of the magnetic ordered state. So at each point in the real space, I have some point in the sphere telling me what my ordered state locally looks like. Now imagine I go around this point, and when I come back, I go from the north pole to the south pole. So I have, but this point is equivalent to that. So that's, I've come back to where I started. But I have this winding then which I cannot undo, and this is then a Z2 vortex. So it's a vortex that can be defined only if you have this coplanar spin structure. And this is something we call a Vison now, I guess. Not yet. Let me get to that. So now imagine I chain my couplings, so I restore spin rotation invariant. The spins start fluctuating all over the map, which means that all the spins here are fluctuating. I mean, these points on the sphere are going all over the sphere. But they do so in a way that the points A and B remain diametrically opposite. So everything is strongly fluctuating, but I still retain this information of that when I go around, I go from the north to the south pole. So I can then I have this defect, which is defined in the disordered phase, where the spins are fluctuating strongly. And this defect is what we call a Vison. Now, if you imagine we go to a paramagnetic state in which there are no Visons, then what that means is that if you make a loop anywhere in the system, you never do, you never go from the north to the south pole. And what that means effectively is that you can consistently talk about the sign of this number z through the entire system, which means the z's can propagate, and these are the spin-ons. So that shows you very simply why you really need suppression of these defects and consequent topological order. And in the same way that below in the XY model below TKT, you suppress the vortices, here in 2+1 dimensions, you have to suppress these Visons so that you're then allowed to get the Z quanta to propagate through the entire system. Yeah?
This calculation is speaking about RC, the kind of
Okay, this, I'm taking sort of an imaginary time perspective where I'm taking a fluctuation in imaginary time. So these are really, I'm just talking about the ground state. So in the ground state, the spins are fluctuating all over the map, and this will lead to some, these fluctuations will lead to decay of spin correlation function at equal time. So in that sense, they contribute to, they're related to the decay of the equal time spin correlation function. It's just a picture one uses thinking about an imaginary time. I don't know if you're not happy with that answer, but that's the best I can do. You had a question there? No. How am I doing? Okay. It's probably a bit too much of a detour, but anyway. So now imagine that, so that's sort of the idea, that when these N1 and N2 start fluctuating, what I'm arguing is that if this transition is of the right type, then you can get to a state where the spins are formed singlet, and you can also have spin a half, spin on excitations. And there's no broken translational symmetry. All right, so now this is what's happening to the F electrons. So now let's ask what's happening, let's turn on the Kondo coupling. Well, the same argument that we discussed before for the Born order state holds now, simply because, again, the spins have all paired up with each other. The F electrons are paired up with each other. So there's no free spins left for the conduction electrons to screen. And consequently, perturbation theory in JK is completely OK and robust. And so the JK equals 0 state, where you have the conduction electron forming a Fermi surface all by themselves, is stable. And so what you've then got for finite JK is a system which violates Schlödinger's theorem, where the volume enclosed by the Fermi surface is the total number of electrons minus 1. So you remove half a spin per unit cell per spin from the Fermi surface volume, which Schlödinger's theorem doesn't allow you to do. Okay, so this is the new state, which we're calling the FL star state, the state with the Fermi surface with volume given by NT minus 1. All right, so let me see how am I doing. So you may wonder, okay, this is a really very simple argument. Once the spins are paired up with each other, you can do this. So, why all this stuff about bisons and all of that stuff? Do I really need that to understand this? And I claim you do, in some fundamental sense. And one way to see that is to look at this argument, which is due to Oshikawa recently, where he talked about a topological argument for Schlödinger's theorem. This is really a bit peripheral to my main presentation, so I'll go through this very quickly and for the people who are interested in this sort of thing. But when I get to section 4, the rest of you can, if you're not interested in this, you can wake up then. Although I'm doing pretty well in time, right? Yeah. Okay, so here's Oshikawa's argument. You take your system, and this applies really in any dimension. It's not entirely rigorous, I think, but it is still a very simple and elegant argument, which has some physics in it, so it's useful to see how you get around it. We take a system, put it on a torus, and let's imagine we have a unit, let's say we're in two dimensions, unit cell of size ax and ay, you take an integer number of unit cells, both in the x and the y direction, with these integers being co-prime. This is where the kind of flaky stuff to some extent comes in. You really need them to be co-prime for this argument to work, but I still think there's something to it. Okay, so what does Oshikawa say? Well, you take your Fermi liquid here, or whatever your metallic state is, and insert flux 2 pi in the center of the torus. And this flux is acting only on the upspin electrons. Now, a flux of 2 pi is invisible to the system. In the end, the eigenstates with flux 0 at h of 0 should be the same as the eigenstate with flux 2 pi. However, the Hamiltonians are not the same. The Hamiltonian, however, related at flux 0 and flux 2 pi are related by unitary transformation. And that unitary transformation is just this simple operator, which takes the, counts the number of electrons on a certain site, and you pick up a momentum, which is just 2 pi over Lx for each such electron, where x is the x-coordinate of that electron. So this is, if you just had a ring, this is an argument you've all seen. If you just had a ring with, and here's the band structure of the ring, you've got a bunch of states with separation between them is 2 pi over the circumference of the ring. When you put flux 2 pi, what happens is each state goes over to the next one, and you come back with the same spectrum after you've got flux 2 pi. This is basically that same thing here, formalized a little bit. And you pick up this momentum 2 pi over L for each unit cell in the y direction. So he said, well, okay. And so more formally, as he goes through the argument, when you do this adiabatically, then your ground state psi changes from psi prime, and your Hamiltonian is related to the final Hamiltonian by unitary transformation. Now you want to compare states corresponding to the same Hamiltonian, not different Hamiltonian. So what you have to do is compare u psi prime times psi, and just you go through a little bit of algebra. This is all his argument. You find that the final state that you get, the difference between this state and that state, is that you pick up a momentum 2 pi over lx for each rho of the system in the y direction. That's, you know, basically exactly this argument. In 1D, electrons move over 1 by 2 pi over lx, and you just pick up a momentum, which is given by this simple argument. Now, okay, so that's an exact argument based upon really nothing. Now you assume that the ground state is given by a Fermi surface. And it's a reasonable assumption, since you're putting a tiny amount of flux in the system, that the only thing that responds are the quasi-particles of the Fermi surface. So you just say, okay, the change in momentum can instead be computed by assuming that each quasi-particle inside the Fermi surface picks up a momentum 2 pi over lx. And now you equate this with this, and after a little bit of algebra, okay, believe me, it's correct, I checked it, you get the statement of Leibniz's theorem. And there's one subtle thing here is that, you know, the momentum is, of course, only defined mod 2 pi over ax. And you're talking about a macroscopic momentum here. And so how do you get this statement with the right mod factor? Well, this is where this co-prime business is actually important. But anyway, so this is the basic argument, which is quite elegant and, you know, simple as it is, it's worth something. So now you can ask, you know, what goes wrong to this argument in this FL star state? Well, so our picture of the FL star state is that the local moments are, in fact, not even part of the Fermi surface. They're just paired up with each other in some singlet liquid of this type. And now you're putting flux phi through the center of the system, which will act both on the moments and on the conduction electrons. Now, so you can ask, if you have this picture of your wave function, what happens when you put flux phi through the center? And this was actually worked out by Bonesteel a while ago. And what he showed was what happened was that precisely that you inserted a vison in the center of the torus, which in the sort of wave function language amounts to saying that if you have some, the wave function is sum over different Dymer configurations with some weight AD, and after you've inserted the vison, you pick up a minus one for each bond that cuts this dashed red line. And if you do this in a translation invariant way, you find that this vison carries a certain momentum. So this is the basic loophole in Hoshikawa's argument. His assumption was that when you inserted flux, that the entire momentum was given by the quasi-particle. In fact, we claim that there's another global excitation, this vison excitation, which absorbs exactly the same momentum that you would associate with one particle per unit cell. And therefore, you know, this kind of state is possible. So there has to be another excitation associated with this change in sign of the valence bond, as I discussed. And that excitation is exactly what's needed to make everything okay. And it's quite a stable state then, which satisfies a modified Leibniz's theorem, where you've removed half an electron per spin per unit cell from the Fermi surface volume. Okay, so that was a bit of a technical aside. I went through that quickly. I have plenty of time, I guess. So now I want to come back to my Doniak's phase diagram and try and discuss, you know, what are the implications of some of these ideas. So the main idea, as I've pointed out, is that we, at least in principle, think we can construct a new state of Kondo lattices, and certainly on the triangle lattice in two dimensions, I think we can quite strongly argue that such a state exists. And this is a state which doesn't break any spin rotation symmetry, in which, very crudely speaking, the spins are paired up with each other and screened each other out, and the conduction electron form a Fermi surface which does not obey the Leibniz's theorem. This is in contrast to the small Fermi surface you get in magnetically ordered states, which, you know, Coleman and Chimiong and others have talked about, which do obey the Luttinger theorem properly defined. Okay, so what are the implications? So this is all, you know, very recent work. We're still playing around with this. And these are some of the ideas, very speculative ideas, that I'm going to present, and which we haven't understood completely. Anyway, so Doniak's phase diagram then was as a function of jk over t. We had the Fermi liquid state at large jk and the spin density state at small jk. So imagine we have another axis, which we call magnetic frustration, which has the effect of destroying, at least locally, the spin density wave order. So at large magnetic frustration, there can be this new phase, which we call the Eiffel star phase. Okay. Now, once you draw it this way, you see it's very natural to also imagine there should be another phase, which we call the SDW star phase. So what is this phase? Well, this is basically you take your Eiffel star phase, where you've got local moments forming the spin liquid and the conduction electrons forming a small Fermi surface. And imagine, say, the conduction electrons acquired magnetic order for some reason. And so then you got a state which breaks spin rotation symmetry, but you still got these topological excitations of the spin liquid present. So you could call that an SDW star phase. Now, this gives you these four phases. And now there's sort of two distinct types of boundaries. There's the what I call the Hertz boundary, if you wish, which is the green line, which separates states with magnetic order and those without magnetic order. And this is really, and all along this line, there's just basically some instability of some Fermi surface, so you get magnetic order appearing. And I think the Hertz theory is perfectly okay along that line. Then there's another theory, another line, which is the orange line or the yellow line, where something very, very different is going on, where you have a topological order parameter. And this transition, at least in the theory I presented, is described by a Z2 gauge theory. And in a very crude sense, what's happening along this line is that the local moments, instead of being screened by the conduction electrons, are being screened by each other. So it's you know, the best approximation we can have of a line at with the, you know, the concept of a Kondo temperature going to zero holds. So it's really the more precise formulation of that statement. This is the line where you have this topological transition between different states, one which has spin-on like excitations and vis-ons over here, and one that which doesn't. Now, one interesting point is that it's very, very hard, however, to distinguish this state from this state. I mean, although fundamentally at a deep level they're very, very different states, you can't do a very simple measurement like neutron scattering or Fermi surface volume and tell them apart. Because here also you double the unit cell, so the modified Luttinger's theorem is equal to the usual Luttinger's theorem, although the physics of the two theorems are very, very different. In contrast, between these two states, it's very easy to tell. So if you could really find this state as opposed to that state, then it would be that would be a very simple order parameter for measuring topological order. I think we're a long way from that. Another interesting thing which I haven't discussed, which Senthil especially has been talking a lot about recently, is that there's another class of gauge theories which are special to actually three dimensions, which I won't go into. Well, I don't have time to present all the details, which instead of dealing with a Z2 gauge description, have a U1 gauge description. So, in fact, they have even more low energy excitations, singlet excitations, associated with the rearrangement of these bonds. And these kind of gauge theories are, I believe, known to be unstable in two dimensions to the Z2 structure, but not in three. So in three dimensions, it turns out that even collinear spin arrangements can lead to spin liquid states and corresponding states of this type with these four phases. So this is just sort of a starting point in building a more sophisticated phase diagram. And let's see. So one possibility that we're playing with right now, partly motivated by the experiment, is that at least in the U1 case, where you have many, many low energy gauge excitations, that actually the FL star phase is generically unstable to long-range spin density wave order. This is like some, at very low energies, it always acquires some kind of magnetic moment. But in this case, you can see that you could, phenomenologically, it is very attractive. You could have a transition from a Fermi liquid to what's really an FL star transition. FL to FL star, the STW is kind of parasitic autoparameter that comes in. And it's described by this gauge theory. So that's one possibility, but we don't know yet. These gauge theories are rather hard to deal with if we're just starting to understand how to talk about these transitions. Similarly, the gauge theory here would give you a very prescribed description. This gives you a way of talking about a transition within a state with spin density wave order with a global topological order parameter. Let's see. What's going on? Oh, sorry. This is the trouble of, okay, so here's, we've also looked at some simple mean field theories of what happens with a function of temperature. And here's one simple analysis. So at zero temperature, this would be, in terms of my phase diagram before, you know, imagine we go from, we are here. Then and ask what happens as you raise the temperature. And then you, at least mean field, you get a region here where you have FL star-like correlations. And eventually at low temperatures, you get spin density wave order. So one picture could be that this spin density wave and spin density wave star is some parasitic, very low temperature phenomenon happening due to, well, just some accidental spin density wave symmetry, and it could be at extremely low temperatures. And the real phenomenon is this transition from FL to FL star, which is given by a gauge theory. So that's, I think, our proposal for what could be behind, you know, really non-trivial critical points in this Doniak phase diagram. So ultimately, the important transition is this transition, and the spin density wave is just some kind of distraction. Well, okay, well, we'll see. So what's one consequence of this? So imagine that we haven't worked this out yet, but suppose it was true that the correct transition was just some spin density, was this gauge driven by this gauge theory with a topological order parameter. What would its consequence be for some observable, like the dynamic spin selectability that you measure neutron scattering? Well, so without any other order parameter, you would write on a paramagnon susceptibility, you know, with some damping here, maximum at some Q, and usually a constant B, which just tells you the spin correlation length. Now, this order parameter that's undergoing a phase transition, the bulk d-dimensional order parameter, is not easy to measure. You can't couple to it directly, but eventually you do couple to it via some composite orders or composite fields. And when you work out then what the consequences of this underlying hidden order parameter, the hidden order parameter undergoing a d-dimensional quantum phase transition, you ask, well, what is its consequence for a simple observable like this two-spin correlation function? You see very simply that it has this structure where you get no singular Q dependence, some anomalous power here with the exponent alpha, which is determined entirely by the theory of this hidden order parameter. And then if this bulk theory obeys hyperscaling, then this would also have a universal function of h bar over omega t. So I would like to, you know, interpret many of these experiments which show precisely this structure as, you know, not immediately say, well, this is local physics. In fact, it is bulk physics. It's just that the order parameter is something highly non-local and hidden. It's not something you're coupling to directly. Now, I think that's a rather general statement one can make for many other non-local order parameters. For example, if you had a spin glass order parameter, this would also be true. One other sort of twist in this Doniak phase diagram happens for, well, our extended Doniak phase diagram, happens when the FL star phase is associated with the Z2 gauge group. And that, you very generically, between the FL and FL star, you get superconductivity. And the reason that happens is, well, I haven't discussed this, this is primarily for the experts, I guess. When you have a Z2 gauge description of the spin-ons are already paired in the FL star phase. And when you go to the Fermi liquid phase, it's effectively the spin-ons and the electrons are becoming the same excitation. So the pairing between the spin-ons then leads to physical superconductivity in between. Well, this is, I guess, okay, another twist to this phase diagram that we're playing with. All right, so let me just conclude. So the basic message is we want to extend the Doniak phase diagram in a different direction. Doniak just had two phases, the FL and the SDW phase, and now we just want to put a star to both of them in this other direction, which could be magnetic frustration. Well, that's really the basic perturbation in some sense. Let's see. Now, and these are the basic phases which could possibly, as I've already discussed with some simple examples, have some rather complicated arrangement with respect to each other as a function of magnetic field also actually has some very interesting effects on these phases. Magnetic field, temperature, JK, you know, some of the phases could be very narrow in some regimes. So that these are things which are just not understood in any detail yet. Okay, so the other point is that once you have these other phases, there's really two different set of order parameters. There's the green line, which is the Hertz theory, and then there's the orange line, which is the gauge theory, telling you about this transformation from FL to FL star. And that's the underlying transition there. And if you really didn't have topologic spin density of order, if you're lucky enough to actually get there, then it's very easy to tell. Just measure the volume of the Fermi surface. Okay, thank you very much.